imagine taking your generosity to the next level, impacting more lives and leaving a godly legacy for generations to come. Get ideas and strategies to do just that when you listen to these personal stories from high-level kingdom champions. The Kingdom Investor Podcast showcases business leaders who have moved from success to significance, sharing how they use worldly wealth for kingdom impact. Discover how they grew in generosity, impacted more lives, and built godly legacies. You'll find motivation, inspiration, and practical steps to grow as a kingdom investor.
John and Ashley, welcome to the Kingdom Investor Podcast. How are you guys doing?
Wonderful.
Great, great to be here with you. We got the smartest person in my life on the call with us, so this is going to be fun.
All right, that sounds great. So tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're coming to us from. John, if you want to start, and then Ash.
Well, we're coming from Opelika, Alabama. We like to say, if you struggle with how it's spelled, O-P-E-L-I-K-A, but Ash coined the phrase, hope you like a Opelika. So it's our promised land. We've committed ourselves and loved 10 square blocks for 25 years. And it's Ash's hometown and my adopted town, 30 something years now. And we have the privilege of working at the intersection of purpose and profits. And not only doing that in companies, but doing it together for over 25 years. So it's unusual to have husband and wife teams like we've had. And the most unusual thing is for 25 years, I led the companies and Ash kind of worked from the background and homeschooled our boys. And then 5 years ago, she took over all the companies and I went in the background some. So it has been an exciting journey. We have kind of coined the word heated fellowship, which is our word for arguing. So we're professionals at having productive heated fellowship.
And yes, this is my hometown. And as much as John has been here for the period of time, we've been together for 32 years. We just had our 30th wedding anniversary this past December. And so he's actually, I think, more Opelikan than he is Georgian. So we're going to give him that. He's now an official Opelikan. That's fine. And we do, you know, it's wonderful, all the work that we're getting to do. Like John said, we're definitely at the intersection of purpose and profit. But we're also getting to see the our legacy of our children working with us. Our oldest son works with us now in our consulting business. Our youngest son works with our construction crews. And it's wonderful to see the next generations working alongside us with the same visions and really getting passionate about that. So we're having a great time here, Daniel. We really are. We're blessed beyond measure in so many different ways.
That's incredible. So excited, interested to hear more. So John was actually interviewed on episode 25, and the kind of the two main things you guys do is you invest in people and places. Is that correct? And so we talked in John's episode a lot about places and redemptive real estate and how they are redeeming 12 cities right now. So incredible episode. Definitely check it out. But in this episode, we're going to talk more about that second part and really how they invest in couples and marriages and people. And so we want to talk about building strong marriages and what it takes and what that looks like. And we're going to start out by hearing their story of their own marriage. But before we do that, Ash, do you mind praying for just this time and our listeners?
Absolutely. Father, I thank you so much that we have such a willing host, Father, just to pull out of us any of the good and the great that you've given to us. John and I are blessed and we are so thankful for you. I pray that you bless each marriage and each couple, husband and wife, that would listen to this episode, that it would give them encouragement and excitement, that God has a great plan and that he has a great love for their marriage and for their place that they are. Lord, I pray that you equip our words with wisdom, Lord, and that it carries out as far as the ears can hear. And Lord, that we would give life, that everything that is said today brings life and hope to the ones that hear it. I pray blessings over Daniel. I thank you that he is so just a gracious host. Pray you bless his home, and I pray you bless his family, and that you just bless all he lays his hands to. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you so much for that. So, John, would you start by sharing your side of the story of your marriage?
Yeah, we've been married a long time. And early on, we had an extravagant belly flop. And that early in life really was helpful for us. We it kind of set the tone for the rest of our life that there's beauty in broken things. And I grew up in a Christian home. My mom and dad loved one another. They were married for 60 years or so till my dad passed away. And but I was adopted as an infant. And, you know, I chose about 13 or 14 years old to rebel, and my brother didn't. And there's, you know, when you raise kids side by side and eat the same Cheerios and one rebels and the other doesn't, it isn't the parenting. And so many parents remember rebellion, we've heard, as rules and regulations. Without a relationship always equals rebellion. And so what happened is I stepped across the line with a little girl, and the first time did something I knew was against God and my family in a way I couldn't undo it, and had sex with her. And I was 13, she was 12, and I started rebelling after that because I couldn't reconcile the mistake I'd made. 17 years old, first time tried drugs, and I liked it a lot. I'm pretty big on anything I get into, and I got big into that. And then by 20-something years old, I was here in Opelika, met Ash, and she came up to get speakers installed in her car at my little shop. And I was like, wow, this girl is, I said, she looked like royalty without a crown. I could see the built-in class she had. And I just knew, I said, this is a serious lady. But it didn't talk really much then, but the guy I was working with there that run the shop in front of it, he said, John, the girl you're with ain't marriage material. I'm going to find you a good wife. And so he hired Ash and started putting us together as a matchmaker. And she wouldn't go for it because I was dating another girl. And he said, I bet you $500 you can't take him away from that girl she's dating. He said, she said, you're on, fat man. And so Ash and I met within a little bit of time, moved in together. And really the first time Ash rebelled against her parents' authority. And we just started on the wrong foot, on lies. I lied and was a drug addict. She didn't know it. And about 3 years into our marriage, we had started some businesses and had a partner that we didn't have alignment with. And we were $1.5 million in debt, $99,000 overdrawn. We were going through a divorce, and I was hooked on meth. And I went in the attic of my house to hang myself. Because I kept hearing, kill yourself, kill yourself. And God kept going, die to yourself, die to yourself. I kept hearing, take your life. And he kept saying, lay your life down. And so the enemy's great at twisting the truth. And if you get to the place you think your life's not worth living, you're probably right. But you got to lay it down. And so in that place, God touched me and transformed me. Everybody doesn't experience what I did, but like lightning struck me. He poured his love out on me and changed me. About 2 hours in that attic. And I wasn't a drug addict anymore. And it doesn't always happen that way. And a lot of problems I've had are still going away slowly and repenting one at a time. But that thing left me. And come down, told Ash, I said, I got born again. She said, you're a liar. And I said, well, I'm going to live it out. And I just tried to begin to be a godly man. And through a lot of counseling and a lot of people's prayers and love, about 7 years of 2 times a week counseling, we ended up reconciling over about a year and then building a life together. Now, working our way out of that debt took about 7 years too. We were penning one check at a time. And boy, during that time, God was taking everything we were going through and building skills for where we were going to. And so our story is we redeem people and places. And we do it because we serve a great Redeemer. And we just go try to get good words from God and wisdom from him and give it away. And we ain't spiritually constipated. We're taking it in and putting it out. And in our marriage, we say great marriages are not built, not found, they're built. And we're just building it. We work as intentionally on our marriage as we do on our properties and our investments. And we say it's 5 F's, faith, family, fun, fitness, and finance. And you better have a sophisticated plan for all five.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, thank you, John. So Ash, can we hear your side of the story of what really happened and how it was going through that, and just unpack that for us a little bit.
You and I are going to be great friends, Daniel. So I actually, yes, I grew up here. I grew up in a mill village, not too far from our offices right here. I grew up in a fairly hard life. Not to give any disrespect to my parents, they loved me beyond measure for sure. Some of the choices they made within their own marriage were hard to live around and be exposed to. So with that, I actually was just striving to find acceptance and to find someone to love me and see me. And John, actually, was someone that got past all of the hoopla of the normal, gazes, I guess you get from a fella. He was just different. And I tell him, I was like, you were like, a little bit like, James Dean, a little bit of a rebel without a cause, you know? And I kind of needed that in my life because I just needed to go against the grain, I think, because I was always so straight laced, always did everything I was supposed to do. I was really a good child. Like he said, I never told a lie to my parents. I didn't rebel against them. And I met him and everything was just thrown out the window and I was in la la land. But, I left my, my family, when I was 18, moved in with John. And immediately, just as he said, it was just detrimental. And I did not know he was a drug addict. He already had a very much lack of trusted. He didn't have any trusting abilities. He had just been in some other hurtful relationships. So the relationship started with him letting me know he didn't trust me, but he wanted me there. And so it started feeling very familiar to being like I was at home. And so I pushed through that and we ended up finding out that we were pregnant. At that moment, we already knew we didn't want to be married to each other anymore, but I was 4 months pregnant when I found out I was pregnant. And at that point, it was just devastational. I called 4 times and made an appointment at an abortion clinic in Montgomery trying to actually abort our first child. Thankfully, could never follow through with that. It just never felt like that was the right thing to do. But that tells you the reason why I was even going that direction was because of how awful our marriage was and our lives were. They were just full of deceit and hurt on both sides. I definitely had gone the direction of not being honest with John about financial things. I didn't know how to do certain things, so I would hide them. And so we were just really making hard choices for one another by making bad decisions. And we didn't even realize we were doing the hurt and damage we were doing, honestly. As that kept going on a little bit further, I ended up being completely separated from John and just not wanting to be around him. He didn't want to be around me. He was busy working probably 20 hours a week. A day or more. And it was just, we just lived in this very shell-like, it was so, I don't want to say fake, but it had no authenticity and no love and no affection in it. And so anyhow, I ended up finding that this gentleman that worked for John or worked for us would pay attention and just talk to me. And it was like a breath of fresh air every time I got to see him, that someone just saw me again. And listened to me and was a friend to me. And that ended up going past the lines, you know, that God definitely tells us to guard ourselves in our relationships and our marriages. And that guard wasn't there. And so the line that got crossed was I committed adultery against my husband. So there we were. And that's the pivotal moments that are going to lead up to where God restored us and everything. We'll share obviously more detail in that, but I was in an affair with another person. He was a drug addict. We ended up he filed for divorce against me. And then pivotal moments happened after that where we started reconciling. So I don't want to go too far in it, so I'm sure you have questions about that. But the truth of the matter is that we both were doing things that were just wrong against God and against each other. At the time, we weren't following God, so that wasn't a compass marker for us to know that we were doing that, but we were just blatantly living life in the most flamboyant way to be destructive and had no cares for each other in that. So that's me. So I don't know if that explained a lot to you or too much to you.
No, that was, I mean, it's, yeah, that's really just incredible that really what God has done through since then, I guess, and restoring you. So can you maybe share some more of the story about how he used those hurts and that brokenness to then turn it into beauty?
Absolutely. I do think John would be best to share first in that, because he was the one that had the breaking moment first with God. And that pushed on the part of my process that actually took me to my knees with God. So I think it would be best for him to share first on that.
Yeah, John, okay. Would you do that?
Well, the big thing, you know, I realized is that God said the man is the protector and the leader of the home, and that I had led my family in the way that wasn't godly, and I reaped what I sowed. If you don't like what you're reaping, you got to talk to the person doing the planting. And I like to say to husbands, God's only got one cell phone number when it comes to your family. He's calling your number and asking, what do you do? What are you doing with what I entrusted you? And I had failed. I'd failed in loving Ash. She would have loved me and walked with me all the days of my life if I would have not behaved in a way that was ungodly and had tons of misplaced loves for business and work and everything but her. And, you know, adultery doesn't just happen. It's step by step, little by little. And you have to acknowledge that the leader, I mean, when God was in the garden, he said, Adam, you know, what's going on? And so I'd led my family in a way that wasn't godly. And that's what I reaped. And then I began to say, well, obviously I've got the best chance of dating this lady of anybody. I'm going to follow God. And I said, God, I'll follow you if Ash doesn't come home. But if you would bring her home, that would be incredible. And I said, I'll commit to love you and love her. And so we just began to try to learn to love one another again. I mean, I thought all marriage was about was sex and supper. And I didn't have a construct of anything else. It was like, man, this is, you know, double the fun and half the bills. And we were going to church, and the church would pull us up and say, look at this model couple before the defecation hit the ventilation. And they just could only see the outside, but inside, we weren't honoring God with the gift of having a mate that loves you. And so we just started loving one another and putting God's word into practice. And we also had a godly couple that come alongside us and said, hey, here's how you do it. And you can't do your own heart surgery. And I think people underestimate the gravity of what it takes to build a great marriage, and certainly what it takes to take one that's all messed up and have it restored. Because it's harder to repair than prepare. You know, I mean, what if you gave your marriage half the time you spent screwing it up to fix it up? And so it's a difficult thing. And so they helped us and taught us how to love one another. And the Bible says, you know, we comfort others with the same comfort we've been comforted with. But I got to the point to realize that God doesn't waste time. Everything we were going through to restore our marriage was what God was taking us through also to build the skills we needed to restore cities and to love places. And so you have to get to the point you realize God doesn't waste time. Everything you're going through is part of where he's taking you to. And the best dang marriage you're in is the one you're in. God's in it. And you got to get to working on your own house. I mean, think about this. If transmission tears up in your automatic vehicle, you've got automatic transmission. Most folks won't fix it themselves. Well, this is more complicated. So if your marriage is not all you dreamed it could be, you better get some daggum outside help. And you need to pick somebody who's got a good marriage to help you.
Well, I guess to wrap up on my side that you're asking for the rest of the story. So where he had his pivotal moment of just giving up and going to the attic to hang himself and coming down and saying, hey, I've changed. I've met God. I'm like, you are a liar. And I told him just straight to, you've always been a liar. You will always be a liar. You're just a liar. There's no way that, like he said, we had been in church. I mean, he grew up in church. His mother was a youth minister. I grew up in church in the way that, you know, my mom and dad didn't care if I went to church. So I went to all kinds of churches. I think by the time I met John, I've been baptized like 10 times. And so if dunking in the water works, if that's all it takes, then obviously I was super saved, but that wasn't true, you know? And so, the thing that got actually brought me to the place, the moment that brought me to the place that I knew I needed this God that I kept hearing about, you know, everyone reading about, preaching about, singing about, and that I saw my husband experiencing. And I had never seen that before. I've been around Christians or people that went to church my whole life, but I had never seen someone radically changed before. And he went from being a drug addict to not a drug addict, from an alcoholic to not an alcoholic. From being this dominating person and personality and controlling to not, to it was so daylight, such a daylight difference. I mean, it was like darkness had completely go away. And so I actually kept seeing the gentleman that I was having an affair with, because I didn't trust that John wasn't playing me. And, you know, and you have lawyers telling you things and friends telling you things like, don't give in. They're just playing the Christian card or the religious card and this and another. And I ended up finding out I was pregnant. And then, about 10 weeks into that pregnancy, I lost that baby and I didn't know whose baby I was carrying. And that was the moment that took me to the end of myself, where I was so much in my way of actually being truly loved. And so there was nothing I could demand from John to even prove or do, because I couldn't receive it. I absolutely was doing everything against myself, you know? And so I surrendered to God on a really nasty floor in our house. You know, the interesting thing, whenever you read in the Word about the scales falling off your eyes and how you see and how you truly see differently, that is not just a spiritual sight that changes. Our physical sight changes as well. It's like our lenses get adjusted and things get cleaned, and we really can see where we are if we pay attention. And to get up off the floor, he got up off a dirty floor in the attic. I got off a dirty floor in our house, and you're looking and you experience this love of God, and you're like, dear God, why would you pick me? And how is it that simple that if you just surrender to you, that you would love me and that you would be faithful to me? And I knew exactly who he was the moment it happened. And so I came up from there and John came out of the attic. Even though those were different times on the timeline, we knew that God, if he could restore us as nasty, dirty, broken, mean, awful, all the things that we were, if he could restore us and loved us enough to restore us, then how is it that he could not use us to restore at first our home, you know, the physical implications, yeah, of what we had chosen, but then our community and then the couples, you know, and just seeing that there's so many broken marriages. And like John said, it's like, there's so many times that we see people just muster through it. You know, they think that it's shameful to talk about it, or that it's, you know, they can figure it out. And I hate to say that's an untruth. I think that's a good resilience and a good mentality that we're going to work it out. But if you don't have someone walking with you that's walked through that valley, you don't have a good lead or a good director or a guide, you know, and it's hard work, but it's such good work. And it comes with the greatest reward. And so I absolutely agree with John. Find someone to walk with that you know has been through it and has been faithful to God and has the absolute result of a blessed marriage from it.
Were you guys able to find somebody like that for restoring your marriage?
Yes, absolutely. God, John and I have always attracted older couples. We don't have many peers our own age. Thankfully, we do have some younger ones that do tolerate hanging out with us now, which is awesome. But now God gave us the mentor that he was speaking of that did the discipleship and the counseling with us for 7 years. out of that, we have actually gained so many wise couples that speak into our lives. I think we have right now 7 couples, if I'm right, John, that it might be 8, but they have different areas of our life that they have their strengths in. But all of them have marriages that we definitely would imitate majority of the parts of it. And the only reason we wouldn't imitate all the parts of it is just because we're not quite there yet. we have one mentor that's in his 80s, you know, and so, but we've gleaned so much from them, and they've opened up their lives to us and the intimate parts of their lives to us on how to make decisions. And sometimes it's not just the marriage. It's the things that actually are pushing on the marriage. It's the children. It's the, you know, what, how you believe, where will you go to church? Where will you live? How will you spend your money? How do you take care of aging parents? Conversations that we got to watch them wrestle through that were really hard for them because big moments were happening in their lives that were devastational sometimes. And they let us have front row seats to that and then turned and instructed us on how this is how, if you are going forward, these are the questions, John and Ash, that you should be asking yourselves and one another on how do you prepare for this?
Well, and it's also a situation where you've got to, if I look at people's time, their calendar, and their checkbook, I can tell how much they value their marriage. Because we spend tons of time and tons of money on making our marriage better. I mean, it takes it. We've got paid help. We got therapists, counselors, coaches. We read books. We go to seminars. We got mentors. We're throwing the kitchen sink at this thing because just like abs, you don't get it without the work. You can't buy abs online. Just click the button, buy now, and have them. If somebody's got them, they've been doing some work. And for us, what if we were wealthy and our marriage was horrible, or we were in great shape and our marriage was horrible? This is, and most people, their marriages are like gaining weight. They gain 2 or 3 pounds a year until they, now how many pounds overweight you're going to be at 50 or 60? And this is something you have to work on. And we work hard at that. Ash and I have taken the tools that we've learned and built, and we've helped reconcile over 200 broken marriages, 5 last year. And it's been an incredible journey, but we have good tools. And that's one thing I notice people don't have is good tools. If I ask somebody, I say, hey, tell me your top 3 tools in marriage that make, this is something that makes your marriage work. Most of them can't give you 3. Now, trying to imagine the best carpenter in the world trying to build a great house with a high heel shoe and a butter knife. He don't have the tools. He can be a good carpenter. He needs help. He needs tools.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do believe that people, and we're one of those people, and we can easily, if we're not paying attention, we can easily fall back into our old habit patterns. But it's really easy to say, hey, yeah, we have date night every week. And they think that that's like a culmination of really honoring that relationship. And it's easy to do that. And it's actually a mindless task to put that on a calendar. But to be intentional about that time with each other is what John and I have found is intentionality. And I believe that God, we know God is such an intentional God. He didn't haphazardly kind of sort of create something that could be beautiful, or he didn't think about maybe that could be whatever cubits long, just build it however you think it feels. He was so exacting, and he is that way in our lives. And he knit us in our mother's womb perfectly, wonderfully, masterfully. I mean, he knows everything about us, every detail. So why would it not be the same way that we need to be intentional about our lives that he gave to us? And so John and I, when we spend our time together, we actually have, John says, planned heated fellowship moments. We don't try to go forward every week to say, yeah, this is the moment we're going to fuss. But some topics are just going to be sensitive to each other, our personalities, how we view things. You know, we're not talking about values of what we agree on with God. We're talking about how to make business decisions, how to make family decisions. And things that might impact others or what we're doing or our calling. And so the way that we work toward that might bring up some heated fellowship, but that is where we do the work. That is where we actually apply God's word and promise and say, you know what? This is what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be wrestling these things out. And then we're supposed to turn and submit to God by submitting to one another and then do the work. And then the rest of the time, after we have those moments, we play. We have a great time with each other. We don't have to wonder if we've talked about everything or working on things or in agreement about things because we're making sure that we plan those moments to do it. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. And it's a plan meeting. Like, who would run their business without meetings with agenda? Like this meeting, we do at the top of our meeting, and we have a document we use every week, a collaborative document. The top is the top five priorities for our week. The next is details, family, personal, prayers, each company, each couple, you name whatever we're working on in our life, it's there. And then the last section is vision, because usually people don't have a place. If the husband or wife is a visionary and just loves ideas and the other one's real practical, they don't vision well together because they don't have a space that's safe to do it. And so Ash is the practical, I'm the visionary. So as we go through all the practical details, at the end, there's a space, a safe space for me to vision. If I tell her I want to build an indoor skydiving arena, or I'd like to start a business that's going to be amazing. I'm going to start this pool cleaning business or a jumpy ball rental business. And she's like, she doesn't pick it apart, which she has gifts to do if she wants to. How are you going to pay for it? Who will insure it? Where's the money? All this stuff. I told her, I said, now nobody gets pregnant without excitement, and you're killing mine every time we get to talking when you start talking about all the details. And so I said, in this vision safe box, what we can do, and we usually change location. We may go on a walk or sit on our porch, and she'll just say, very interesting. Tell me more. And I said, the more you say that, the more excited I get. You don't have to come up with new terms. That term right there, interesting. Oh, tell me more. That's like, I get excited as could be with that. And so that's how we handle that meeting that we have every Sunday, which is an intentional meeting to stay on the same page.
You know, I will tell you though, Daniel, that is one of the subjects that we talk with couples we're working with a lot, not necessarily just the heated fellowship and the going through the document that we go through to have these discussions, but how their different personalities are approaching those type of discussions. More than not, I would say most of the time, I align with the personality of the husband or the dudes. I have a very dude-like personality. I don't fluctuate up and down with my emotions. I'm very straightforward. I'm very realistic. I'm not, outlandish or whatever. And John definitely is more of a filler, more of a sensation. So he gets excited, then not excited, and then not excited. If you have those dynamics in the relationship, it doesn't matter if you're husband or wife. If you have each one of those dynamics in a relationship, the person like me, that's real, I'm serious. I hear very present. If you say something to me, it's what we're going to do. I get really nervous if I'm hearing you constantly talk about building things, buying things, going places, because I'm assuming that is what's really happening, because that's how I talk. If I'm saying something, that's what I'm doing. So that's how I hear as well. Whereas someone in John's personality who loves to vision and ideate and come up with grand plans, which we have to have, by the way, or we won't ever really do anything. but if you're like him, then you're hearing someone like me shoot you down because we're asking questions that honestly sounds like we don't believe in you. We don't think it's a good idea. We kind of sound like we're condescending to you. It almost might make you sound like what you're saying is stupid or doesn't matter. And so we had to work a lot through that on how do we trust each other to bring our greatest part of our personalities and our giftings that God gave us into our marriage and still do this good work. So that's why we have what we call our integrator vision kind of meeting. We have, what do we need to do? Give me the task. I'm on it. John, what are you dreaming? So we can hear that and give you the space for that. And then I've learned how to ask questions. Like he said, tell me more. And I don't ask specific questions unless he invites me in to ask those. I don't have to. I don't have to worry with it. But we meet, we talk in a lot of relationships where that's a lot of tension, is because someone's always worried that someone's about to do something that they weren't prepared for. And the other person that is sharing the things quit sharing because they don't feel safe to share anymore.
And sometimes if you're wired like me, you don't know what you think till you say it. You're actually whiteboarding with other people and you're responding. You may say it confident, but you're confident that you're thinking about it, not confident that you're going to do it. And you're whiteboarding with them. And once you say it, it gets clearer. And so what we do in these meetings is that we use a framework, provisional, plan, and promise. So provisional is no idea is a bad idea. Let's brainstorm. You don't have to worry about it. We're not going to do it. Plan, we're going there, but we're not sure how. Tons of details to work out, tons of executional things. Promise, come hell or high water. We started the LLC. We've signed the paperwork. And so we have to frame our conversations. Can we have a, like, even a document that we'll do for a, like a big deal we're doing, it'll be divided in a section that's provisional, a section that's plan, and a section that's promise. And we move from one piece to the other intentionally. Because a lot of marriages have not a vision, but division. And division's two visions. And if you want to know if your marriage is divided, and more than likely it is, in fact, we haven't found one to win this challenge on the first go, is just say, okay, you got $10 or $10 million left at the end of the year. Husband, take your little index card, write the top three things we're going to spend it on. And wife, you do it too. And we never get the same answer if they hadn't spent time working on that. And it's not that either answer is wrong. It's just if you don't have a vision, people, places, and couples perish without vision.
Yeah, that's good. So what preconceived ideas or notions did you guys bring to your marriage, and why is that important?
The shoulds and oughts, huh? I definitely, I know I didn't have a good idea of what a marriage really looked like, of communication or anything. So I thought just because we liked each other and because we wanted to be with each other, that it would just work out. And I thought that if we just worked hard and went to, you know, did what we're supposed to do at work, whatever, that we would have a decent life. I didn't have as many expectations, I would say, than John. I just didn't grow up with an expectant life. And then I also did not, my personality doesn't have grand expectations. But the shoulds and oughts is, I honestly just thought that we should do good work and that we should be okay. And that he ought to love me and he ought to pay attention to me. So those were, I had very basic ones.
We say a lot of marriages, people should on each other, you know, you should be, you should this, you should that. And one thing I thought, she should like me grabbing her butt and telling her she's pretty. But that really wasn't moving her the way I expected. So I'm like, well, I don't know. This is way more complicated than I initially thought. And so what I began to realize is I didn't know how to love her. And that's a real problem. You know, how do you love? Like, I thought it showed her love to say good things about her and to tell her she was pretty or whatever. And really, I was giving her what I wanted to receive. It's a big deal. So what I realized, God gave me a question that opened the door for us as a big piece of our reconciliation, is I went to her with, I think, the best question I've ever asked. And I said, what is the one thing I could do to show you I love you? The number one thing that I'm not currently doing. Not 10, because I knew she had 10. Number one. And just like, bam, like this, she said, don't throw sweaty socks on the floor inside out. I hate it. I thought, wow. Would have never guessed that one. I said, you'll never pick another one up. I said, every time you look in that laundry basket, you'll realize I'm crazy about you. And so we have to work hard to love one another. There's two things that God's supernatural tools that'll make every marriage work, love and forgiveness. Love is an action. Show me what you do, and I'll tell you what you really believe and think. So get to doing something that matters to them, not you. I mean, like I asked, there's certain things around the house. She'd say, I told her, I said, I'll do anything at this house you want me to that shows you I love you. If it isn't, I'm paying for it. I'll pay somebody to do it if it don't show you I love you. But if I get love credit for it, I'm doing it. So, and I said, so that, but then forgiveness. And for us, do you think we still think about how broken we were and what we did to one another living in the same town we lived in? Do you think it ever comes up? Think I ever talked like the guy who was the wrong guy, not the right guy? Do you ever think I see guys look at Ash because she's pretty and say, oh, we still live with the part of what we lived through. But I realized something about forgiveness. Forgiveness is not a vaccination. It's a second by second, minute by minute, hour by hour choice of your will to stick that thing back under the blood. And so if you get the love and forgiveness thing shaken, there's about half a dozen things that'll make this thing work like nobody's business.
So what are some other tools for how to build a strong marriage that you can share with us?
I think one that Ash and I share often is this one, options open and make the decision. And it's a tough one. And so I'm an options open guy. I will keep my options open as long as humanly possible and then make the decision when it's forced by a deadline. Ash, she gathers her information. She's ready to do it. Give you a great example. We're in Italy one time and we're getting ready to leave and we have some leftovers, this pizza. And she's like, hey, baby, you want this pizza? I'm like, I don't know. Just leave it right there. I may want it in a little bit. So she's getting ready. And of course, the detail person realizes that the trash has to be put out by the thing and you got to do this. You got to do this. There's a thousand things you got to do to get ready to leave. I'm not thinking of details. I'm thinking of pizza. And I said, hey, leave it there. Well, in a few minutes, her face is getting much redder. Do you want the leftovers? We got to go. And I'm like, I don't know. Leave them right there and I'll throw them out as we walk out. And you see this all the time. Ash can give you an example of how she kind of solved airline tickets was another great one. And I'll let her kind of share how she taught me about those guys.
I was just trying to think yesterday. I think it was yesterday John was doing something. He doesn't like reading detail too much. It's like instructions, things like that. That's just like whatever. And I can't remember what you were doing yesterday, John, but I said, oh, he was reading about some meds that he's taken. I was like, well, it says right here. And I was like, did you not read it? He goes, I really don't read that much. I'm like, what do you mean? So anyhow, airfare. Oh my gosh. And so anytime we're planning to go somewhere, John immediately starts thinking of, oh, where we're going and who can we connect with? And he's got friends all over this world, not nation, not city, not state, world. And so he's optimizing everything you can imagine. So it would be, let me think about it. I want to see, we might stop over here, we might stop over there. So genius move of his is he's like, hey, so when we go to Italy, like I was thinking, we could stop over in England, in London, and stop by and visit or meet this guy that I met online. Before we fly home, I was like, you don't like drop by. That's like a total, first of all, it's a whole other country. They're not like right next to each other. And it's like, I said, there's a little bit of, scheduling I'll need to do for that. Can I have some particulars? Like what day, what city, where are we going? What do we do when we get there? Do I need to make a hotel right here? It's like, I'll let you know. And that kept going for the years that we've been together. And finally I told him, I was like, okay, here's the deal. The further you go out, the longer we wait, obviously the more expensive it gets. And I'm starting to stress out because I don't know how to lock in the plans and I'd like locking in my plans. And so anyhow, I told him, it's like, now you got a deadline. You can do whatever crazy ideas you want to do. You can dream about going to meet Bugs Bunny if you want to. It doesn't really matter to me. But on this date is when I have to make the decision. And if you haven't given me your direct feedback on that, I'm making it without you. And he's just like, all right, that's cool. That makes sense. So
and I saved tons of heated fellowship because I used to be like, what? You made it? I was close. She's like, I gave you a 2-week. I'm making the tickets X time because the longer you go, the more it costs. And then you'll get upset about the cost. So she said. And so it's just the tension of knowing if your options open and you're going to slide in, like even getting things done. My best work comes with the excitement of a deadline. All that does to Ash is stress her out and make her really, really not like what's going on.
I'm a little bit more systematic than him, for sure.
Any other tools that you can share? Those two are really good.
Yeah, one is that we say every marriage has nuclear waste in the basement. And people are like, oh, we don't. I said, okay. I said, well, here's the way you know if you got some of the ways you know if you got nuclear waste in the basement. Number one is if you're arguing with your spouse in the shower and they're not there and you win, nuclear waste in the basement, unforgiveness. Also, if every conflict you have or heated fellowship isn't just hysterical, it starts to be historical. You remember when your daddy and you said last time we were at that's record of wrongs. And if there's anything Ash and I get to live, we live now where we used to live 30 days of hell and a day of heaven. Now we live 30 days of heaven and a day of hell. Hell's still there, but it's getting pushed back a lot. But we only have today's conflict, which we can deal with that. But before our kid, Nelson, who he could start knowing where the conflict was going, because we, you know, you start on microwave popcorn and you end on yo mama and remember when. And so unforgiveness is cancerous. If God had a currency, it would be forgiveness. So there's a couple of words. Like we worked with a couple the other day, smart guy, smart. And they think about getting divorced. They had two kids and he's fixing to be a doctor. It was a big deal. And he said, what should I do? I said, it's simple. Learn these words. I was wrong. Will you please forgive me? And then wait for an answer. I said, that's all you got to do, and do it a lot. It takes a lot of repenting to get a relationship connected. And if you're the husband, it's on you. Lead by example. If your feet don't line up with your mouth, you ain't the man you say you are. And if you want to know if it's a godly man, just look at the wife's face. That thing radiates it.
Thank you, John. So how can we leave a godly family legacy?
That's a good, deep question. I was going to jump on that, but now I'm going to give it back to Mr. Marsh. That's a Marsh question. He loves legacy. Not that I don't, but he really studies it and spends a lot of time with other people with that.
I mean, I think the hardest thing is to leave a legacy on the hearts of men and not just in sticks and bricks. And your kids being the toughest, your kids know all about you. They see you as you are, not as you want to be. And that there's powerful things around that. Our oldest son wrote a letter to me a while back and told me all the times that I showed up as a godly man, and none of them I would have picked. But what they want to see you do is just live it before you give it. If you're not repenting to your wife and your family and your kids for being wrong, how are you teaching them to do it? They need to see you. I was wrong, little guy. Will you please forgive me? Daddy lost his temper and kicked the daggum, you know, the headlight out of the car or something. You got to tell them, because they saw you act up, act like an idiot. Don't act like you didn't. And then secondly is you got to, I think that we have to find common ground. And as our kids get older, common ground is more difficult to find. So I want to know what our boys are thinking and what our grandchildren are thinking so I can meet them where they are instead of asking them to come where I am. And there's teachable moments and understanding the window of teachable moments. One time me and our youngest son, Josh, were in the Caribbean. We were doing this little paddle boat. We looked over this house and said, buddy, look at that house. That used to be Chuck Norris. I knew he'd think that was cool. He's like, whoa, daddy, that's Chuck Norris' house. He's tough. I said, yeah, he don't live there no more, though. He said, why not? I said, well, he got a divorce and sold the house. He's like, daddy, why do people get divorces? And so I saw it. I said, I don't know, buddy. What do you think? I just left it there. Then he's like, no, you do know. Tell me. Now he's listening. I said, well, I think when you stop learning how to operate in love and forgiveness, buddy, divorce gets really attractive. And if you look at the divorce rate in the church and the world, you see, they hadn't got this thing figured out. You know, if we were a bunch of people, had a gym and trainer, and we were unfit, that's how the church looks about marriage right now.
All right. So if somebody wants to hear more or get involved with what you're doing, how can they reach out or get connected?
Well, we have a website, marshcollective.com. We have a podcast around the work we do. And Ash and I talk some marriage on there too. It's redemptification. Think gentrification redeemed. And if you go on, we work with about 4 or 5 high impact couples a year now as part of the work we do. And there's a place on our website to get information about that. There'll also be a faith-driven investor and entrepreneur marriage series we did coming out pretty soon. And we're going to lay the tools out, some of our best tools on there. You'll at least leave with a Phillips head screwdriver, a hammer, a few other things. You can do some basic work if you got them tools. So that'll be coming out in the next few months.
So I will. I'll tell you, on the website, it's marshcollective.com, but it'll be connect with us. And on that sheet, the little form that you fill out with your information, you can pick whether or not you are interested in talking to us from a marriage perspective, or if you are a company or if you're a community. And so we would love to hear anybody reach out to us. We'd love to be a blessing to anyone. I will give one of my tools that I definitely, or one of my suggestions. John and I protect our bedroom, and we don't argue. We don't talk about anything that has to do with anything besides our love and our marriage. And our bedroom is our sanctuary. And it's one of our, it's actually a guideline, a rule that John put up together early in our reconciliation. And it has blessed us so much that we know when we go into that, behind that door and we close it, is peace. And there's no drama and trauma going on behind there. It's just love. And so that's not necessarily a tool that we give. That's just a gift of experience to say, apply this immediately. You'll be grateful for it.
And sometimes we got to stand in the hall.
Hey, let's take that one
outside. We're going to stand out in the hall. I know people think, man, these folks are crazy if they stay with us. So we stand out in the hall talking it through, but we're not going to do it in there. That room, when we close that door, it's the safest place on earth for us.
Yeah.
All I'm going to do is tell her how much I love her and appreciate her. And
now, when we step out of that room, and I know we'll be getting off in a sec, but one of the things we talked about with faith driven is the different types of hats that we wear. And it's really easy to assume that when you're married, you're just a husband and wife or a mom and a dad, and that's it. But we fluctuate with hats on and off all day long, and we don't honor the hats that's on our spouse a lot of times. And so, you know, being wise to know when I'm speaking to John, am I talking to him right now as a wife to a husband? I might be speaking as a wife, but he might be hearing me as his partner at work. You know, and so that'll throw that off, or vice versa, you know. And so even if you don't work together, we have different hats that we'll wear, and how we stand up and approach conversations. And that brings dynamic energy if it's not handled properly.
Well, Ash says it. She said, I'm the daughter to the king. Second, I'm a wife to my husband. And third, I'm a mother to my children. And job ain't in the top three. And so when you think about priorities, the way we think about it is God's first, I'm second, my wife's third, my kids are fourth, my job, or the people I'm called to walk with actually are fifth, and job ain't in the top five. See, most people, I think, and I wrongly didn't put me first, but you love your neighbor as you love yourself. And if you want to know if you struggle to love someone, it's because you hadn't received it, so you can't give it away. You know, I always ask God, I say, God, if love is a high jump bar of doing your stuff, I am sunk. Patient, kind, long-suffering, no record of wrong, hope all things, believe all things, trust all things. Man, I can get like one going at a time or something. And the Lord showed me, said, that's not what I expect from you. That's how I'm going to be to you.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show and sharing your wisdom and your story and being vulnerable. I really appreciate that. How can we be praying for you guys?
Well, I think pray that God will give us wisdom as we go forward. I feel like a mosquito in a nudist colony. We got so much opportunity. And so we want to be doing the things that God has us do and using our gifts appropriately. Ash says, I'm entrepreneurially promiscuous. And so everything looks like stuff we could get involved with. And we need God's wisdom to make an eternal investment, to not get so tied up in investing in temporal things, that running right alongside every customer is an opportunity to show them how godly man and woman act.
Absolutely. All right, let's pray right now. God, I thank you and praise you for John and Ashley. Lord, just the blessing that they are. I pray that you would give them wisdom, that they would be able to steward well the gifts that you have given them, and that they would be able to invest in eternity, invest in your kingdom, and be kingdom investors, continue to be kingdom investors. God, we are so grateful to you for them and their impact. In Christ's name, I pray, amen. Thank you guys for coming on, and thank you guys for listening to another episode of the Kingdom Investor Podcast. We'll see you next time.
What if you could take your generosity to the next level, impacting more lives in your community and around the world, creating a godly legacy for generations to come? Now you can. Your first step is crafting your kingdom investing thesis. Reserve your spot in our next online workshop, where we guide you through the process of discovering your passions, create a strategic plan, and connect you to opportunities that will help you fulfill your God-given calling as a kingdom investor. Register today by clicking the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next time for another episode of the Kingdom Investor Podcast.